Well, welcome back to another episode of the Vertical Podcast. Glad you could join me today. Now, the NBA Summer League is in the books, but it's never too late to look back and see what some of the big names did. No better person to analyze all that with me than Fran Fraschilla. Does a great job covering college basketball and the draft for ESPN. And we dive into Lonzo Ball. We look at Jason Tatum. We take a deep dive into some of the international talent. We cover it all. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way to support it. Head over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, let's go. My guest this week, one of the best college basketball analysts in the game today, Fran Fraschilla, former college basketball coach, now does a fantastic job covering the game for ESPN. He's out here at the NBA Summer League, just soaking in the good basketball, right, Fran?
The epicenter of the basketball universe in the summertime. That's what Las Vegas has become. So I love being here. Well, I've seen a lot of friends, and it's sensational. Sensational way to kill a couple weeks in July when you miss basketball.
When you're watching Summer League basketball, mm-hmm. we all know the long list of Summer League legends that never panned out. And
right.
When you see these guys play, I mean, how much should be read into it? How much is just the high-level players are just head and shoulders better than everybody else?
I take everything in the summer with a grain of salt when I come out here, and you watch some really great performances. You have to kind of put it into the context of what you've seen over the 4 years, let's say, of a young guy's career. Sometimes it's over one college season, but I've watched some of these kids since they were freshmen and sophomores in college. And there's no question that if you're averaging 20 points a game in a summer league, you're doing something right. But it's got to be put in the context of the team, what they're looking to get out of their draft picks and how they're utilizing them. It's funny, I was telling Mark Jones on the air yesterday, one of the most important things about having a good summer league team is having a really good point guard that can run the offense. Not necessarily a guy that's going to play in the NBA, but if you want to find out how good your other four summer league players are, you better have a guy that can really run that offense. And even if it turns out that he's heading over to Belgium or France this season. But it's fun to watch these guys in the summer and compare it to how you thought they played in college.
And you were mentioning, too, before we came on the air here, that Malcolm Brogdon did not have a great summer league last year in terms mm-hmm. of scoring the ball. Turns out he was a fantastic NBA player, so
exactly.
It goes both ways.
Exactly, and he shot 35% here, you know, and I think I told you it was like he was the 79th leading scorer mm-hmm. in all the summer league. So you take it with a grain of salt. I've compared it to double-A baseball, you know, and double-A all-star game, which is always fun. If you get mm-hmm. a chance to go, you get to see some of the top future prospects, but not all those guys pan out. Not all those guys playing in Thomas and Mack are going to pan out.
This draft is going to be known one way or the other for the point guards drafted.
Yeah.
Five of the top eight guys were point guards. It could turn out to be the greatest point guard class ever, or it could turn out to be just a bunch of guys that were drafted pretty high that didn't pan out. We've seen both ways. I mean, go back to the Ricky Rubio, Johnny Flynn draft, Steph mm-hmm. Curry drafted there. He's the only one in that group that panned out. But when you look at just this crop in general, do you look at them as potentially elite players from Fultz at one down to Dennis Smith at eight, or do you see it differently?
No, I think they all – it's interesting about all the point guards, including the French kid, you know.
Frank Ntilikina.
I think the interesting thing about all five point guards is they're all different. You know, Markel Fultz is a and you know what's also interesting, Chris, when you talk to your NBA friends, they don't really look at it as point guards anymore. It's playmakers, you know. Playmakers, wings who can make shots and defend, wings, and bigs. And your bigs are all – you know, a garden variety of different skills. But with this class, when you look at the point guards, Markel Fultz is a scoring machine. Then you have Lonzo Ball, who is an incredible passer. And he had 11 more assists last night. You take a kid like De'Aaron Fox, perfect speed for the modern NBA game. Dennis Smith, prototype NBA point guards, the strength and the speed and the power of a Baron Davis. And then Frank Ntilikina is interesting because he's the youngest guy of that group. He's 6'5", and he's really a multi-dimensional kind of player. He's a kid that, as I've evaluated him, I don't see him as an all-star, but I see him as a solid 10-year starter who can play both the one and the two. He's got a high IQ for the game. So it's going to be interesting to see how they all pan out because they're all different and they're going into different situations.
It's not a vacuum because there's a first-round pick that was included in it, but what did you make of Boston's decision to move off one? Fultz seemed like the no-brainer pick at the top of the draft. The Celtics move down. They get that first-round pick, but you know they basically swapped Fultz for Jason Tatum plus a first-rounder. What did you think of that?
Well, I thought it was a good deal for both teams because Philadelphia had to have the guy they wanted, especially in the backcourt, you know. And so they had to give up an asset to be able to take a shot at the number one pick. And I thought Danny did the right thing for a number of reasons. He collected another asset. I mean, think about it. They could be a 60-win team this season, and they have an incredible future lineup of draft picks. Inside baseball, I was at the first Jason Tatum workout in L.A. with the Celtics. I was lucky enough to, you know, be a fly on the wall, and he had an unbelievable workout. And, of course, they all talked to him afterwards. Danny was there, Mike Zarin, Austin Ainge. And I thought, interesting. They look like they were impressed. And then I heard the second workout back in Boston was equally as good. The one thing that Jason Tatum did so much better when I watched him work out in L.A. for a few days than he did at Duke was he shot the ball extremely well from the NBA line. So I get it. Now, in context of draft of signing Gordon Hayward and having Jaylen Brown, it's going to be interesting to see how that dynamic works. But the other thing it tells you is they have a great all-star point guard. Marcus Smart is still on a team. They're going to have to create, I think, some more shooting. But I thought it was a good deal for both teams.
And we know Brad Stevens likes positionless players. Mm-hmm. He wants guys that can play the four, maybe defend a little bit of the two, you know, all throughout. And Tatum and me, he seems like when he puts a little bit more muscle on, he could turn into a pretty big problem as a stretch four. Like he might be able to, more than Jaylen Brown could step up, I think Tatum is more equipped to play that four position.
Because he can score from out there. And there's no question, I think, the way the game's going, you have to have positional versatility. And he can definitely do that. And I agree with that. The interesting thing about Tatum and the thing I love so much about him and being not being a Celtics fan, but being a Knicks fan. But the thing I love about him is the fact that he does kind of have some Paul Pierce in him.
Yeah.
You know, not the super duper great athlete by NBA standards, but a technician, great footwork. And then if you add the improved accuracy behind the line, because he's really good in the mid-range, he has a chance to be really good.
Yeah, that 1 foot step back that he's already shown.
I've seen him work on it. And see, that's the crazy thing. You know, like I've seen him with his workout guy, Drew Hanlon. I've seen them work on that shot. And I think one of the first shots he hit in his Duke career was at the Garden, and it was the same move. And so he's got that in his arsenal. It's something he's worked on. That's why I call him a technician.
Fultz, for better or worse, is going to be compared to the other guys that were drafted high, Derrick Rose, Russell Westbrook. When you're drafted that spot, you're especially in a draft this deep, you're expected to become a superstar. Do you think Fultz has that superstar potential?
Well, I think he has all-star potential. Mm-hmm. Now, whether he becomes one of the top 10 players in the league, you know, I think there's a, you know, I mean, you can make an argument that there's a difference between being an all-star and a superstar.
Sure, absolutely.
But I do think he's got all-star in him, and I've watched him since his junior year in high school. And, you know, one advantage he has now is he's going to a team as the number one pick. There's no question Philly's still in the process. But if Joel Embiid is healthy and Ben Simmons is healthy and Saric is really good, Robert Covington is vastly underrated, in my opinion. Some of the other guys adding J.J. Redick, I think his job's going to be a little easier than a normal number one pick. But I think he's got a he's got the it factor to me. He has a quiet swagger, and he also has an ability to create his own shot. And there's a lot of guys that can create a bad shot. He creates his own good shot because of his unique ability to separate from people. The defense is a question, but I think his give-a-damn meter is high.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
What I love about him and just watching him, and I watched a little bit of Washington, but yeah. The Salt Lake Summer League and the one game he played in Vegas before he got hurt, great body control. Like
yes.
When he gets into the paint, it seems like he can move people around almost like chess pieces. And that's a Chris Paul characteristic.
Yeah.
It's a Steve Nash characteristic. Maybe not as explosive as Rose or Westbrook
right.
is, but I think he just has that knack in the paint area to be under control more than they did at that stage.
Totally agree. And the thing about him is he can get to the rim, and now finishing at the NBA level is not going to be as easy as being in the Pac-12, but he's going to have the ability to create those kind of double clutch, you know, hang in the air, switch hands kind of shots. He's terrific in the mid-range because he can get away from you and rise up and shoot over you. The outside shooting, I would say, is good to slightly above average, but not great yet. That'll have to be improved on, but I'm a fan of his. And getting back to the defense real quickly, I have four clips during the Pac-12 season where Washington turned it over, and he essentially went 80 feet to block a shot on the board, a la LBJ. And so that's there. He's not going to be a great defender initially, and even if he's serviceable, that'll be good enough. But he definitely has a want to be at least serviceable.
I tell you, that Philadelphia team is as interesting as any team in the league. I mean, they could be in the Eastern Conference the 5 seed next year if things break there, right? Or they could be back out of the playoff mix. I think they're as volatile, as unpredictable as any team out there.
Well, I think to me it's all about health. I think if they're healthy, it'd be hard for me to imagine they couldn't get into that top five based on the glimpses of greatness we saw from Joel Embiid. You're adding a really good player in J.J. Redick. He might be on the downside, but for what they need him to do.
Make shots, be a mentor.
Yes, exactly. And then, you know, again, I get back to Robert Covington, talking to the Sixer guys out here. They swear by him, and they swear by his defense. And then I'm a huge Šarić fan. I always have been, because that kid gives you everything he's got. He's a great teammate. Puts the team first. He's a warrior. If he shot the ball better, you'd be looking at a borderline all-star. But I think as it is, he's going to be a really good I used to say about him that, you know, even if he's a flop in Philly, he'll end up in San Antonio and be really good.
Yeah.
You know, because he's that kind of player. But, you know, nobody has a better feel of the international game, and maybe some as good, but nobody better than Brian Colangelo. Mm-hmm. So I think Dario's going to fit right in over the long term.
He got better every month. Statistically, he was just getting better and better. Yeah. And I think he can be an all-star. I think there's that's in him. Like, you know, a superstar, probably not, but, you know, a 17, 18-point scorer, I mean, that's...
Well, they may have too many all-stars. Yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? So he may not get the chance.
That payroll is going to be hilarious. If everything works out, that's like a $400 million payroll with luxury tax.
I've talked to Bobby Marks about this, our buddy that's just come to ESPN, mm-hmm. and, I mean, we're talking... He said, like, 2020, 2021 is going to be insane in the NBA.
Yeah.
You know.
Those luxury tax penalties start kicking in.
No question.
Strange landscape. Yeah. The one guy in this point guard class I had the most question about was De'Aaron Fox, largely because, well, two reasons. His size bothered me a little bit. You got to be big to play in the NBA at the point guard position. And, you know, jump shot. Like, was he going to be able to develop the jump shot to play at a high level? Again, it is just summer league, and maybe I'm lured in, Fran, by his personality. He's got a very magnetic personality, which I think is great for Sacramento.
Yes.
To have somebody that can be the face of your franchise that is that kind of guy. But when you look at his jump shot and the evolution of it, do you think he can become an effective 35 to 38% three-point shooter that can take him to that high level?
I think he can, and I have the same exact questions that you did, and I'm trying to find a comp as far as the shooting, and I don't think Michael Conley was a great shooter at Ohio State. I could be wrong, but
no, he came along a lot as a pro.
Yeah, and I think if he could get to, like, in that ballpark, then I think you've got that magnificent speed and ability to, you know the way the NBA game, and you've watched it for a long time now, you got to get easy baskets. And you got to get out in transition. You got to play the speed game or pace game, pace and space, you mm-hmm. know. And he can do that. But the one thing about the jump shot is that it's not really in his DNA to be a long-range shooter, because at every level he's gotten to the basket at will. And I think he's going to get to the basket at will in the league because of the rules. Now, the strength will be an issue, finishing. He showed a really good floater game, but I haven't been enamored of his jump shot, and I think it's going to be an issue early. And then the best thing I love about the NBA, from a guy who watches more college, and I see these guys, it's almost like we cut them loose when they go to the NBA, like mm-hmm. you kind of open up the pen and they fly away, is to see guys get better, to see guys improve over 3 or 4 or 5 years. And there's great coaching in the league, great player development. So let's see how Sacramento develops his overall game, but he certainly has the ability to become a good NBA point guard.
I thought Sacramento had an excellent draft, and nobody has been more critical of Sacramento over the years than me. I've dropped the hammer on them repeatedly over the years, but give them credit where it's due. I mean, they stepped up, they get Fox, and I even like the Harry Giles pick, and it was a 20. I mean, you know, he may take a year, and it's still a risk no matter what happens because of the injury and if that athleticism doesn't come back. But, you know, if you looked at the boards for Harry Giles coming out of high school, friend, he was lottery, high lottery, that
he
type
was.
Of guy.
I wasn't in love with him. Mm-hmm. I wasn't in love with him as a top, you know, five pick. But there's no question at 21, it's a good risk. There were some other guys at 21. I'm thinking Tony Bradley. I was a huge Tony Bradley guy for the long term. But you're right. They give Sacramento credit for this, and they may lose Scott Perry from what I'm hearing.
Yeah,
to the Knicks. But they took great kids. You know, they took solid guys. You know, every one of the guys they drafted is a solid guy. They signed veterans who are solid guys, great role models. Bogdan Bogdanovic, a favorite of mine, is a solid guy. So they're heading in the right direction. George Hill is going to help De'Aaron Fox immensely. Hield and Bogdanovic, you know, both have a chance to be good, not great, but good players. And then we'll see how Scal comes along, because Scal was surprised me by the jump he's made since the middle of last season.
Mm-hmm. I think they whiffed on Papagiannis, though, a little bit. I don't think he's...
As someone who is a fan of international hoops,
right.
I was shocked and surprised on draft day when his agent told me, I think he's going to go high. And I was excited because I get to talk about the guys if they do.
Right.
And I get to say whether he's 2 years away or not. Mm-hmm. I don't think I said it with him, but I felt it. And he's definitely a project.
Yeah, no question. Yeah. In the Summer League overreaction category, there
yes.
are two guys I want to ask you about. The first being Dennis Smith Jr., who
yeah.
has really played well out in Las Vegas. And we know that Dallas has been starved for a point guard for years.
Yeah.
I mean, really, since the post-Jason Kidd era, they've been looking
yeah.
for.
Jay Kidd was the last quality
They've
player.
Been shuffling guys in and out. Yogi yeah. Ferrell was fantastic last mm-hmm. year, but he's widely looked at as a quality backup point guard
yeah.
with that team. Smith, they draft inside that top 10. He's looked good. And, you know, the questions that people had about him last year, I mean, the plateauing of his game at a certain point, answered a few of them anyway in Summer League. What did you see in him coming into the draft and out here?
You know, it's funny because I've talked to my NBA friends all the time about the draft. I love the draft. We run a pro scout school out here, you know, that I'm a part of MCing, and we do a lot of draft talk. And a lot of what makes a successful draft is good information. It's not just talent and evaluation. It's good information. And the information that I knew about Dennis Smith, having been around him as a high school player at the Under Armour Steph Curry camp, and then following his career, being at practice in December, I've always felt he was a really good kid. Chip on the shoulder, no doubt. You know, I don't know if – I talked to Mark Gottfried. He wasn't hard to coach. Mm-hmm. So – And his talent level, his athleticism is there. You know, he's not a polished player. When you say raw about a player, you're usually talking about a big guy. But his game is raw. Reading pick and roll coverages, which he's going to have to do every night. He's like a talented quarterback who hasn't been in an NFL system. I think being with Rick Carlisle and having to have to play, but having Yogi there and J.J. Barea, I guess, but being with Rick, having
he'll get an opportunity right away.
That's what I mean. Yeah. And I my information that I knew about him was I liked him as a kid and a competitor. But I will say this: the last month of his college career was awful. It was brutal. It wasn't the same guy that I enjoyed coaching and then watching the first two thirds of last season. So I would have had questions too. But nobody I've ever heard who's talked to him or talked about him didn't think he wasn't a competitive kid and wasn't a really good talent. So now he's going to get the opportunity with a tough-minded coach who's going to coach the daylights out of him to be a good player. And by the way, one last thing. When he was going into his senior year of high school before he got hurt in August of that year, he was the top dog. I mean, it was really Markel Fultz was just coming on the scene, and Lonzo stayed in California. He didn't play on the travel circuit. So the top dog of all those guys was Dennis Smith. Mm-hmm. So being picked ninth, I guarantee you, will be something he remembers every time he steps on the court against some of these other guys.
My question, you brought it up, you know, playing for Rick Carlisle can be hugely beneficial. Rick's
yeah.
one of the smartest coaches
yeah.
in the NBA, but some point guards have chafed. I mean, most recently, Rajon Rondo playing for a coach that's so very heavy-handed. Now, Rondo was an NBA champion.
Right.
Rondo was an established player. How do you think Dennis Smith is going to react to being, you know, coached strongly by one of the strongest coaches in the league?
It's a good question. You know, you would probably know more about the Rondo situation because you were around him in Boston, and it's hard to for
big
a,
personalities, yeah. both the same, never quite got on the same page.
Leopards don't change their spots, yeah. right? You know,
ironically, still Rick gave Chicago a strong recommendation on Rondo.
Yeah.
So. Just didn't work, but they knew the skills in each other. Just didn't work out
well,
together.
Well, I mean, I think you know better than anybody that I'm sure there were times. I know there were times in Boston where they wanted to smack him around.
Oh, too many to count.
Yeah, exactly.
Too many to count.
But here's the deal. I put my coaching hat on for a second when I love utilizing my coaching hat when I'm evaluating players or people ask me about guys. I like coaching guys with a chip on their shoulder. Mm-hmm. I like hard-headed guys. I like stubborn guys. Because they cared. And that's the one thing about Dennis Smith. He cares about being great. And Rick Carlisle, and I talked to Rick about this, they cut the playbook way back when they brought Yogi in the middle of last season. So Rick, yeah, he's an offensive genius, you know, near genius. But I think he'll coach him well. He'll be tough on him. He'll bring him along. But then you look at some of the veterans on the team, too, you know, starting with Dirk and going down the line. I think it's a great fit. And one last thing. You know, I talked to Stephon Marbury when we were out here. Mm-hmm. And I've known Stephon growing up in Brooklyn since he was a kid. I've known the whole family my whole life. And we were talking about Dennis Smith, and I lamented the fact that he wasn't going to the Knicks. He had a great point. He said, Coach, I'm glad he's not going to be in New York because he doesn't need that. I live in Dallas. It's a great sports town. It's a Cowboys town. They love the Mavericks when they're winning. Mm-hmm. They don't care that much. And that's a perfect environment for him to go in and make mistakes because they'll appreciate watching him grow as an NBA point guard. And 4 or 5 years from now, when Dirk's long gone and they can rebuild the team, he should be a central part of that.
Yeah, I agree. I think keeping him out of calling it a microscope in New York is an injustice to microscopes. I mean, it is, and I've lived there for 15 years.
What do you call those things when they check your rectum?
I
coach there, okay?
Yeah,
that's
pretty
much.
Know.
I don't know, it's not called a microscope, but I know they dig deep.
And especially
no pun
the Knicks.
Intended.
And especially the Knicks, who have such a, I mean, again, hostile doesn't even begin to describe the relationship with some of the reporters that they have there. It's ugly. So, yeah, you're right. I think it's good that he's in a little bit more of a low-pressure situation, especially in the Western Conference. I mean, Dallas isn't going into next season thinking they're winning anything.
No,
I don't think now is a bad time to be rebuilding. I mean, look, the NBA, it's decided for the next 4 years. Barring an injury, we're done.
Exactly. And there's some good young teams in the West that are
sure.
It's going to be, you know, Denver and Sacramento and Dallas, you know, they can all get better on their own time because they're not going to get better anytime soon.
Support for the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They understand that home plays a big role in your life and family. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. It's convenient. Our trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And in addition to getting a real mortgage approval in minutes, you can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you're getting the right solution for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply. Understand fully. Mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/Mannix, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
When you looked at the lottery area or the, you know, inside the 20s, who was your reach? Where do you think was a team that went up a little bit too high to grab somebody?
Good question.
Let me give you mine then first. What are you thinking?
Yeah,
I'm
going to
go
couple.
With I'm going to go with Zach Collins. He was a little bit of a reach to me just because. Look, when you're not the best, when you're not the best player in your team, and you're coming off the bench, and you're, you know, you've got this potential. I mean, I can see him maybe developing into a solid stretch five or four type, 10, like going all the way up to grab him there. I would have taken him in the late teens. 10 to me, Fran, was a little bit too high for Zach Collins.
And you know this, that's recency bias.
Mm-hmm.
That's having a couple really good games in the NCAA tournament.
Which is always a bad idea. Malachi Richardson,
bad idea.
Derek Williams, bad idea.
You know what? In a smaller way, Wesley Iwundu of Kansas State became very sexy after a really good performance against Wake Forest, and I watched him for 4 years. Good college player. Maybe he makes a team. He's probably a D-League, G-League kind of guy. Mm-hmm. But what I didn't like about Zach was his he's got no physical presence. He's weak, and he may have some – he's got a chip, and he's got some talent, but it's going to take him a while. I thought the interesting thing about Zach was all the big guys kind of – like the point guards, but just in the teens, they all had something good to bring to the table. But in the case of all the big guys, Jared Allen, Justin Patton, Zach Collins, there's a few others, Anubogu, whose medical hurt him, and Hartenstein, another medical guy, Tony Bradley – they all brought something to the table, but they're all light years away from being, you know, quality NBA players. Mm-hmm. So I thought OG Anunoby. Now, my son was a grad assistant at Indiana this year. I really like OG as a kid. I thought the fact that he got hurt made his draft stock rise, mm-hmm. which is ironic. He's a one-way player right now, strictly defensively, and he could guard a lot of good NBA players, but offensively he's challenged. His shots, is below average, and he can't dribble. Mm-hmm. But because he's a unique athlete, and Kawhi Leonard's had so much success, I honestly think people get caught up in that, you know, comparison bias. So he was a guy I thought. The guy that I'm impressed with here that I thought was a fabulous college player, but he didn't guard a chair, was John Collins. Mm-hmm. A tremendous athlete, had an incredible ACC season, can really score around the bucket and out to 12 feet, but he couldn't guard anybody, and he refused to get in foul trouble. So he'd let guys score on him. So it's going to be interesting to see. Atlanta's really high on him. He's one of the buzz guys of the summer league. It'll be interesting to see what happens when we get to November.
When a smart team moves heaven and earth to get into a position to draft a player in the second round, it perks my attention. And what Golden State did to get into position to get Jordan Bell, giving up, I believe, the full $3-plus million that you can do to get a second-round pick,
yep.
that set off alarms. Like, I mean, who is Jordan Bell? I mean, what kind of player are they going to get?
Perfect fit for a team like the Warriors, who don't necessarily need him right now, but he fits their culture. He does have some Draymond in him. And I talked to Larry Harris from the Warriors right after the draft at the under-19s. And he said, let's go back a year. Okay, they bought a pick to get Patrick McCaw.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that turned out to be a home run, you know. And Patrick.
I saw Patrick out here obliterating people. Like, what are you doing here, Patrick?
Exactly.
Like, just go take a couple weeks off. Go away.
What I love about Patrick McCaw out here is he feels like he's the best player on the floor because of his rookie year, and he's playing like it.
Mm-hmm.
But Patrick was phenomenal as a pick because, first of all, his father was a high school coach. And he knows how to play. He's got positional size. He shoots it well, and he defends. And that's all they needed him to do. Out here, he's trying to do more stuff off the dribble, which is great. So they hit the home run with Patrick last year. And in talking to Larry, they had two guys. There was another guy. Can't remember who it was. I know I liked him. Mm-hmm. I can't remember who it was, but I know I liked him. And I certainly liked Jordan Bell. And so what the Warriors did is they said when they got the opportunity, if we can buy into the 30s and Jordan Bell is there, that's our guy because he is a high-energy big, a little undersized, but plays with incredible effort. He's a great athlete. He rebounds, he runs, he blocks shots. He's got some Draymond in him. He still doesn't have the outside shooting, but and he's playing like it out here. Mm-hmm. I mean, he affects the game. The other night when they won a two-point game, I think it was the double overtime game maybe. I can't remember. But anyway, he was a plus 27 in a two-point game.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. So, I mean, kudos to those guys because they had a plan and they executed it.
The other guy making the summer league – all-stars out here in the minds of a lot of executives is Donovan Mitchell, who, you know, look, Dennis Lindsay's done as good a job as anybody over the years at drafting these guys, not necessarily in the top five or six, but, you know, low teens. Rodney Hood was a great pick for him a few years back. He's been masterful in finding elite talent, and he looks like he might have, I don't want to go too far, but something in Donovan Mitchell. I remember when he was drafted, I was only looking at it through the lens of, okay, you draft Donovan Mitchell, what does that mean for George Hill? This was before the Ricky Rubio trade went down. So, and then the context of Gordon Hayward, I never really sunk my teeth into the player they might be getting. What kind of player do they have out there? 6'3", is he a combo-type guard in the NBA?
I had questions about Donovan. We saw him out in the hallway today, and I've known Donovan for a long time, and An incredible kid, first of all. And let me just segue here for one second.
Sure.
As a fan of the NBA, and not somebody that's immersed in it daily, this is the best. It's the best the NBA's ever been in terms of the, not only the teams, and you know, we can argue about the 80s and 90s, but the character of the stars in this league is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are incredible role models, and the character of the young players that keep coming into this league, you know, the Jaylen Browns and, the, you know, just going down the line, the, you know, the Lonzo Balls, and it looks like Donovan Mitchell, I mean, De'Aaron Fox, these kids are super guys. So, first of all, you have a guy that fits the Jazz culture. You have a guy that the Jazz obviously felt was better than most people felt. I thought there were some things about Donovan I didn't like. I think he's a combo guard. I think his best attributes will be to be maybe a off the bench, you know, guy that can play both spots. But he's a tremendous athlete and initially a very good defender. But here's what I like about him, because I didn't like him or his game before the draft. He didn't realize 3 months ago how good he is. So, like, when you watch him out here now, he's doing stuff. Heck, and I remember reading a quote the other day. They said, when did you think you could become a pro? And he said, not until 2 months ago. Well, most guys go to college, Carolina, Louisville, Kansas. They think they're going to be pros. This kid was under-recruited, under the radar in New York. And only in his sophomore year, because he averaged 7 points as a freshman, only in his sophomore year did he realize how good he was. So what you love about guys like Donovan Mitchell is the sky's the limit, because he actually is starting to believe he could be really good. And the good news for the Jazz out here is that he's playing like a guy who thinks he's really good. And so from that standpoint, you got a sense he's going to get better and better.
It feels like we're in kind of the age where combo guards – It's better to be a combo guard now than maybe it was 20 years ago. 20 years ago, you almost had to be a 6'5", 6'6", 2 guard to play in the league. Now, right. I mean, just naming a couple of top of my head, you have the two guys out in Portland, Lillard and McCollum, you know, both yep. playing the same backcourt, not overwhelmingly big size. Avery Bradley now at Detroit, sort of a combo guard.
How about Houston?
Yeah.
Hall of Famers.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? I think this about that. First of all, the league, we've seen the league evolve. More than one playmaker is a good thing. I mean, 2 and 3, if you have 3 out there at times, which the Warriors do sometimes, that's even better. Mm-hmm. Very few teams have that. But here's how I describe playing with 2 playmakers. Have you flown to Europe anytime recently?
About a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you get on the plane from Boston if you knew there was only one pilot up front?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay,
no.
Well, you know.
I can have me looking on the plane from Vegas back to Boston.
Exactly.
Who's in there?
Yeah. So my point is, it's okay to have 2 pilots, because mm-hmm. sometimes one of the guys wants a rest, you know? And so guys like Donovan Mitchell that can play both spots, or, you know, I mean, you can think of 10 guys in the league, and we'll see that in Houston, right? Because mm-hmm. it seemed to me either James Harden at the end of the season in that Spurs series was either betting on the games or more likely was just
gassed,
yeah. right?
And he talked a lot about how he was fine. I'm not resting at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And then Game 6, no Kawhi Leonard. He looked – and in his defense to some degree, I think San Antonio does an amazing job of building walls. And when James is going at a defender,
yes.
he's seeing 2 guys behind him too, and he's just like, you know what, the hell with this.
They had a great strategy. But so I think that the way the league is evolving now is to be able to put multiple playmakers out there is a good thing. I know as a college coach that there were times where I left a good player out there and I would say, rest on offense. You know, so-and-so will bring the ball up. You just get over here and rest. We'll run an ISO, you know, 2-man game over here. So, but we need you to play defense. But we just rest on offense. And you know, the NBA game to people who follow college basketball, they don't realize how many possessions in an NBA game. So the way the game is going with the space and pace, the more you can put multiple playmakers out there,
mm-hmm.
it fits. And I think you're going to see that in Sacramento with George Hill and De'Aaron Fox.
Mm-hmm.
You know that De'Aaron can be out there with George Hill, who can play off the ball some, and he's got a safety. Security blanket, and I think that's a good thing.
You're one of the best international minds out there when it comes to basketball as well. This was not a year where there was a lot of depth in the first round when it came to international mm-hmm. talent. The year ago it was. Just a blip, you think, on the radar? Any trend developing based on this year?
No. I remember about 7, 8, 9 years ago, we had a slow draft with international guys, and you know, some people said, oh, that's it, you know, the faucet's been turned off, and I don't think so at all. I think it's It's cyclical. You had some guys that could have put their name in this year and decided to wait another year. I think next year is going to be, if not a great year, a good year. But we've got the one great player in Doncic, who's going to be at least a top five pick. I don't know if he's the number one pick, but so no. I think the way the NBA is going, and by the way, what's happening is all of a sudden you're seeing veteran European players who weren't drafted starting to, or guys that were drafted and decided, okay, Bogdanovich, for example, now's the time to come. He's 20, about to turn 25, I think. But so no, I think this trend towards the shrinking of the basketball globe is going to continue. And if anything, it's waking up American college players because, you know, last year's draft, I think 26 of the 60 players were born outside the United States. So slow year. Jonah Bolden looks like he might be a steal for the Sixers. Early second round, former UCLA Bruin, who's played very well out here. But I just think it's cyclical.
What do you think of the future of the Asian market in particular? We saw a kid, Zuki, here in Vegas playing right now. You've had some bigs. I spent some time in California with, and I'm going to butcher his last name, but Guo Ailun. Was it Ailun? I'm going to mess
it
up. The point guard. Yeah. Spent some time.
Ailun.
Yeah. There you go.
Joe Chi.
Yeah.
Who's here with the Rockets.
Okay. Yeah. So you're having some.
Looks like, you know, The only reason I know is because if I don't know the names on TV, they go, he's not an expert.
Yeah, see, I don't have that problem.
I can make up names. I can.
Do you see it? Is it going to become – are they going to start putting more players, think, into the NBA? How do you see the China, player development system in China in particular?
China, I actually – I hate the name drop, but I was in Shanghai in November because Harvard played Stanford in Shanghai, and my son just graduated, played for Tommy Amaker, as you know. And so my wife and I went to Shanghai, and I got to see the Shanghai Sharks. Bob Donawald is a good friend of mine. He was the Olympic coach of China in 2012, and Bob coaches in China. So I ask him this question all the time. Here's the sad part about China. 1.3 billion people, 400 million Chinese basketball fans. They don't have a point guard. They don't have point guards in the country. Guo Ailun is the closest, and he's way out of control. You know, he's way out of control. But it's they don't have a development system. Yao's trying to change that in Shanghai. He's actually trying to start high school basketball. But in China, despite the huge population base, if you have 20 pro teams, their club system is the only way you can become a professional player. If you're not in the club system, then you can't be a professional player. So you have 20 different club systems, which might encompass a few thousand young players at the most. And I was driving around Beijing last November with our guide, basketball guy, and I said to him, I saw a park, a lot of people playing. And I said, so you mean to tell me if there's a really good player in that park, the local pro team, the Beijing Ducks, won't sign him? He said, nope. They get them at an early age. They check their bones. They check to see how tall they'll be. And, I mean, China's got some of the tallest players in FIBA basketball, but no guards. They play with no creativity. And their system is such that they don't really want creativity because of the culture. They don't want people thinking that they're better than the next guy. It's a very unique system over there, even though they love basketball. So China is in a world of its own. And at the moment, I don't see it getting a whole lot better.
It feels like athletically they're behind, and that's a problem for guards. Yeah. I mean, you have to be a super athlete, or else you have to have an enormous skill level if you're not a super athlete playing the NBA.
Yeah, and with skill level is that creativity that we see all great guards have. You know, even if they're not a great athlete, and I think Steve Nash, your degree, was probably a great athlete, but just in a different way of measuring athleticism, but not in a Russell Westbrook sense. But Steve Nash was a great athlete, but also Steve was so creative and skilled. And they just don't have that over there. And it's sad because the people love basketball. They love basketball in the Philippines. It's growing in Australia. You know, it's growing around the world.
Yeah, it surprises me, I guess, a little bit especially defensively, you have to be an athlete. I mean, Guo is a interesting offensive player. Yeah. I think you could shape him to be an NBA offensive player.
Yeah.
But if you can't defend anybody, you're not going to play
same
in this
thing. They actually have a young guard that plays behind them on the Olympic team. That's better. That's a more the first time I've remembered in a long time they have somebody that looks and plays like a point guard. Mm-hmm.
Before I let you go, I want to ask you about the new Clippers point guard. Who, speaking of not playing defense,
Milos Teodosic.
Yes, who is going to make probably two or three great passes per game. But you know, when I talk to people about Milos, there it's. Yeah. The word kind of indifferent to defense oftentimes comes up. How does it's hard to play in the NBA. That position especially, Fran, if you're not going to be at least a decent defensive player.
I'm anxious to see him because he's one of the great YouTube players in the world. He could be the best passer in the world. Mm-hmm. He could be. If he's not, he's in the top five. I don't know. You would know better than me, Chris Paul, maybe. Certainly Lonzo Ball looks like he's going to be, and a few others, But his feel for the game offensively is amazing. He's like Ricky Rubio, but he's a more dynamic scorer. And, Ricky obviously is so pass first that it's hurt him at times, even though I think he had his best year last year. And he's a great defender, very underrated, unless you know the game, mm-hmm. But Teodosic is the opposite. He just doesn't want to play defense. He's not good at it. And on his national team, where he's playing for a hard-nosed coach, Djordjevic, who was a great Serbian player, one of the best players in Europe in his time, when I watched and covered the Olympics last summer, he either guarded the worst perimeter player, regardless of position, or he came off the bench. And there were certain games in the Olympics and in the pre-qualifying where he didn't even start because everybody knows he's the best player on the team, actually outside of maybe Jokic, mm-hmm. who's coming on quickly. But when they would play games, oftentimes he wouldn't start because I believe, I'm thinking of, like a coach, Coach Djordjevic probably didn't want his defensive mentality disrupted by a guy who is not going to open the game playing hard. Mm-hmm. But he's going to be fun to watch because there's going to be nights on SportsCenter where he's going to do stuff and you go, hold it, run that back. And then it's going to be anxious. I'm anxious to see how he plays with Blake and DeAndre because they're going to catch a lot of lob plays.
Lob City's not going anywhere with this guy around.
It's not. Now, he's on the downside of his career. That's right. The other thing at 30. He's not in his prime. Slightly past the prime. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm. I tell you, Doc Rivers might set a record for most offense-defense substitutes with Beverly late in games. Yeah. In and out.
Well, it's a great point because I think Patrick is going to have the assignment when they're on the court of guarding the best perimeter mm-hmm. guy. And if there's a weak link at times, you could slide Milos over. But mm-hmm. Especially as you get deep in the year into the playoffs, that's less likely to happen.
Mm-hmm. Fran, always terrific to talk to you. Always learn something every time you're around. Thanks for taking some time to do the podcast.
Thank you, Chris. A pleasure.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Fran Fraschilla for joining the show. As always, you can download archived episodes on Apple Podcasts, also known as iTunes, or on TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.